Cape Talk. Call Pippa now on 021-446-0567.
That is the number to dial if you've got a gardening question, because our resident horticulturist, or almost resident horticulturist, Charisse Viljoen, is with us in studio to tackle your questions this afternoon. Either calling in or pop them through as a WhatsApp to 072-567-1567 with a text or voice. And lastly, don't forget the SMS line 31567. Welcome back, Charisse.
Hi, so lovely to be here, Pippa.
And lovely to see you looking so relaxed and obviously enjoying your new role.
I'm absolutely loving it. That garden has got so much fragrance in it, old nectar, scents. You know, scent is a thing I enjoy immensely in the garden, but I have yet to come across a garden that as you turn a corner, a different scent hits you. So at the one moment I'm smelling jasmine, then I walk this way and it's wisteria, and the next way it's a different jasmine, the tree jasmine, then there's rose fragrances. I'm constantly looking about thinking, what is that fragrance? It's changed from where I just was. And learning the garden, learning the plants, it's been a fantastic adventure so far. Old Nectar is beautiful. In fact, we're having an open day at the end of the month, a spring garden celebration over 3 days. It's the 30th and 31st of October, and including the Monday, which is the 1st of November. It's 50 Rand to get in, and under 18s are free. It's really lovely to bring a picnic, and any dog, pet, you know, friendly dogs on leashes are welcome. A lot of the proceeds, the great proportion of them will go to animal welfare. And then we have Balanced Coffee that will be serving coffee. So come and see the garden. I am trying to find a plant that Peter and Una van der Spay have not yet got in the garden. Every time I think I've got it, I turn a corner and there it is.
Okay. There we go. Please vote first on November the 1st and then go into the garden afterwards. I will add that, but that's wonderful. We'll remind you closer to the time as well about that open garden event at Old Nectar. In the meantime, Charisse, we've got two beautiful books to give away that celebrate one of the most show-offy flowers in our gardens, the gladiola. Now, this is a bit of a bittersweet conversation today, because the book we're giving away is a celebration of a life's body of work for two people whose lives were lost. I'm talking about Rod and Rachel Saunders, who were killed in KwaZulu-Natal in 2018. Seed collectors, horticulturists who spent their lives searching for and documenting and photographing South African bulbs. And this book, published posthumously, is really their life's work, isn't it?
And what a tribute to them, Pippa.
It's
the photographs,
gorgeous.
The information. I particularly enjoy, you know, you could see what plants people they were, to the point that they describe how one species will differ from another with a photographic evidence to help you distinguish between the two, the way they sometimes include pictures of the seeds, the description of the ecology. It's absolutely beautiful. The photography, and particularly the habitat. Whenever I'm struggling to grow a plant, the minute I see where it naturally grows, it gives me so much intrinsic information about how best to grow that in my garden situation. And it truly is sad, but what an amazing tribute. And it's available at the Kirstenbosch Botanical Society bookshop for 420 Rand. And I think that considering the circumstances in particular, but even if it wasn't that, what a lovely collector's item and a readable book.
It really is. So Saunders' Field Guide to Gladioli of South Africa. It's available at the Kirstenbosch bookstore and in all good bookstores, published by Straight Nature. The price, 420 Rand. And thank you so much to the publishers who gave us two copies to give away today. If you are somebody who loves to grow them and you'd like a little bit of expert help, please just pop an SMS through to 31567. We need your name, your ID number, and the word gladioli, please. Just send us that information. The first two who send us all of that in an SMS to 31567 will win a copy of the book. Is it a difficult flower to grow, Charisse?
They can be. Yeah. It's more difficult to get hold of the bulbs than to grow them. They're a spring bulb, so you really need to keep them dry. If you're growing summer rainfall gladioli in the winter rainfall or reverse, you need to make sure you're only watering them in their natural rainy season. Okay. But otherwise, they may make lovely, if you get a winter rainfall glad, you can leave it in the ground. If you're in the summer rainfall areas, you can leave them in the ground. If you're growing cross, then rather put it in a pot and take it out and dry it and then plant it again. It's that wonderful surprise element of things, like it's like seeds, you know, you put them in the ground, you hope for the best, and then it's so rewarding when they when they make that display. So they are absolutely beautiful, and their flower structure is so unique. It really draws one's eye in.
Okay, so if you need any advice whatsoever, my advice is to go and pick up this book in your local bookstore, The Saunders Field Guide to Gladioli of South Africa by the late Rod and Rachel Saunders. What a pity, though, that they're not here to see the celebration of their life's work that this book represents. Again, we have two copies to give away, and I'll announce the winners in just a moment or two. Let's dive straight into our listener questions. And Charisse, the first one came in from Margaret last time, and just too late for us to answer. I promised her we would start with it today. Margaret is mailing us from the Wolseley area, and she has three wild dacha plants, which she says have become rather straggly. We've given them a trim, but how hard a haircut should we be giving them, and is it too late to do so now?
I wouldn't do it going into summer, and I know they're going to look really awful with their struggly, dreadful leaves and stickly sticks for the rest of summer, but in mid-winter, you could cut them right down to ankle height. It's very harsh. If you're feeling a little nervous, just look for a little bud, a little green, little hope of something below your cut, and cut back down to that. But we cut them really hard. Knee high if you're nervous, ankle high if you're feeling brave.
Okay, Margaret, be ruthless. Charisse has told you so. Thank you so much for your email. Okay, the first WhatsApp that came in a little bit earlier was from Alan in Somerset West, who it says, we have a Solanus, a potato bush, which is always being eaten by a flock of mouse birds and hence never thrives. Several neighbours have similar bushes, which are stunning, covered in leaves and flowers, and the mouse birds never seem to go for them, although they are only metres away. Is there any reason for this and any possible solution?
I am completely flummoxed. As long as they're both in berry, they should be equally tasty. But I do have a friend who keeps saying that my gooseberries are just nasty. They're bitter. I don't water my gooseberries enough, and she'd prefer better watered gooseberries. So I do wonder if someone is providing a bit more fertilizer and a bit more water, if those berries just aren't a little bit sweeter. But any listener who has any other theory, please help me out.
So it might be that Alan has done too good a job looking after his potato
bush.
Not trying to discredit your neighbour in any way, Alan, but that might well be the solution. If anybody else has experienced that or has any insight into what it might be, I mean, you can't very well make the berries less sweet now. And I don't want to tell him to look after it less well in the season ahead.
No.
So I don't quite know what to do.
It's quite the dilemma.
It is a bit of a dilemma. Alan, I'm hoping somebody listening might be able to give some advice to you beyond what Charisse has just said by way of possible explanation. Please stay with us. Right, congratulations, Andrew Legg and Tim Conradi. You were the first two to get us all the information we asked for on the Gladioli book, and you have each won a copy of Saunders Field Guide to the Gladioli of South Africa. Congratulations. My producer Rafiq will be giving you a call to tell you, take your details and connect you with your copy of the book. Right, another WhatsApp is in. Just a reminder, you're also very welcome to call in on 021-446-0567 or leave a voice note on 072-567-1567. This will make your heart sing. Charisse, this WhatsApp says, thank you for the old nectar mention. I took my elderly mom and dad there for Tonedag. That was Garden Day on the 17th, I think it was.
It was.
And it was amazing. I'd heard you mention it last week for a second, and we made an entire day of it. That's firstly, I'm so glad that occasionally people actually act on the suggestions we give them on the show. But thank you so much for that feedback. And Charisse is beaming from ear to ear hearing that feedback. All right, the next question is from Jean, who has been in her house for 31 years and has two hibiscus trees. They are never without flowers, but all of a sudden both of them don't have any. Anything I can do for them, or is it simply the end of the length of their life?
No, I seriously doubt that. We've been having a little bit of weird weather in that it is still pretty cold, even though we're in October already.
I'm wearing a shawl.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we've had intermittent rain. And I think that sometimes plants just have a little rest period when they're thinking, is it flowering time or isn't it flowering time? And sometimes if they flowered or fruited really well the year before, they also have a less prolific season the year after. I would give them a little burst of boost of fertilizer and make sure you keep up with their watering, and also to give them a little bit of trail mix, which is a trace element mixture. Trail mix. It's available in every retail store, and wait it out. They'll come back next year. You can also give a light prune to stimulate them into activity again.
Okay.
But no, they last so long. Don't give up on them.
Okay, Jean, Hope that's helpful to you. Thank you so much. Right, let me just scan through. We're getting lots of set-top box questions, and I'm looking forward to posing those to the next guest after two. In the meantime, the gardening ones. Let's move on to Des in Tableview. Good afternoon to you. Asking when one should prune lavender.
You should prune it regularly. They do have a big flush of flowering now in summer, so a prune after that is good. But I find the more regularly you prune them and cut the flowers, the more vigorous they remain in their growth, the more compact. If you hesitate or you wait, they tend to get leggy, those ugly ankles and branches start showing. But truly, if you're worried about an annual prune, then post-summer, early autumn is the best time to give them their hardest prune. But remember, never into old wood, only into the fresh growth. They don't shoot back from old wood, and you can lose an entire bush by pruning them too hard.
Okay, so this is not like the wild dacha where you need to be very vicious. It's
opposite.
The opposite. Okay, thank you very much, and good luck, whoever sent that question. Right, another anonymous WhatsApp from somebody who has two coral trees, both grown from seed about 5 years ago. They're now about 4 meters tall and about 30 centimeters thick at the base, but they don't flower. How can I get them to flower? Because this is so disappointing.
Oh, it is, isn't it? They might be a little bit like fruit trees and they need to get to year 6 or 7. Alternatively, because they're still young, you might be overwatering them. They're one of the plants that need to be starved a little of water in order to be encouraged to flower. So it's either the timing or it's overwatering. Keep them as dry as possible. Get them into the ground if you can. And then afterwards, you should see some flowers from the next year onwards. But well done growing them from seed. We only ever try grow them from truncheons, which is big branch cuttings. How lovely.
And quite impressive growth in just 5 years. 4 meters and 30 centimeter base. That is seriously impressive. Okay, interestingly, a second different person asking a very similar question about their coral tree not having flowers at the moment. So I wonder if the weather again is playing a role.
Absolutely.
Here.
So plants often flower when they're stressed. If they're being provided with good water and cooler weather, they are going to be busy growing. It's putting on stem growth, vegetative growth. There's no need to flower. They're going to do that when they're worried about their lives. They're in fear for their lives when they're flowering lots of times. Sorry, everybody. I know.
Terrible thing to think about when you're looking at your garden and enjoying the flowers.
Absolutely. So I think just give them a chance, and often, again, there's a rest period, there's a difficult year, and you'll get a much better flush the following year.
My guest in studio is Cherise Viljoen, horticulturist at the Old Nectar Gardens in Stellenbosch, and we are happy to take some of your calls on 0214460567. In the meantime, lots more WhatsApps coming in. Karine has a pincushion whose leaves are turning yellow from the bottom of the plant, rapidly moving up. What am I doing wrong, she asks.
Oh, you're doing nothing wrong. I'm so sorry. Your plant has managed to contract an illness called Phytophthora. It's born in our soil and our water. It's a natural bacteria. It's something the produce are susceptible to. You can try drench the ground with a fungicide that your local nursery will recommend to you, any soil drench fungicide, but it usually is the beginning of the end for us at Kirstenbosch as well, and any of the other gardeners will tell you that generally it's possibly too much water, or its lifespan, or just managed to get infected, and it's usually a very sad outcome. But
sorry,
nothing you've done wrong, just a fact of life.
Tell me the name again, please.
Phytophthora.
Phytophthora.
PH.
So maybe Karine needs to Google that just to make herself feel a little bit better as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Karine, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news like that, but thank you for your question. Back to the fruity things we go. We have a fairly big and healthy mulberry tree. I hope you've got a neighbour with silkworms. I want to know if it can be moved and replanted is the question.
Yes, but don't do it now. Wait until it's finished fruiting and it's reduced its leaf and gone deciduous. Take as much of the root ball as possible and cut back as many of the branches as you can. And in this little bonsai form, you can transplant it to wherever you next want it. Remember to give it quite rich soil with lots of compost. Don't over-fertilise. It's in a bit of shock, but a little fertilizer and Kelpak will help with the stress once you've put it in its new home. And I suggest you do that in June or July of next year.
Okay, so definitely not now then. Wait a good long while before you do, and find a neighbor with silkworms in the meantime to keep going, keep supplying. Okay, another WhatsApp from Anonymous. When is the best time to prune a guava tree in Cape Town?
I am going to resort to my standard question when I have absolutely no idea, which is after it's fruited. But somebody's going to have to help me. I'm not actually sure.
Okay. Hoping we have a guava tree owner in the audience who can tell us when there's fruits and therefore when it could be pruned after fruiting. Hope to get back to you on that before the end of the hour. I think we can squeeze in one more, and it's a pest control issue. Somebody's got grey snot-nosed beetle killing everything. They said, I've tried neem oil spraying. This seems to deter them but not eradicate them. I've also tried diatomaceous earth. Got me stumped there. But any suggestions for dealing with grey snot-nosed beetles, Cherise?
Well, first, kudos to the listener who's mentioning the fact that they're trying to do this very environmentally friendly. They're definitely using organic products. And really, it is just this constant application unless you're going to resort to a toxic poison, which I would like to discourage. But depending on what the snot beetles are damaging, you might have to turn to a contact poison. I would suggest just repeat more often and bear with it. I'd cut off any damaged plants, but the next step would be to go get something a little bit more vigorously poisonous from your local nursery, if that's the way you want to go. You can see I start speaking
slower. I can see
slower,
you don't want to recommend that, Cherise. So if you are able to carry on trying the more difficult route, obviously that I can see very clearly in your face that is the preference. Mm. Okay, last question very quickly. Good afternoon, says a WhatsApper. My olive trees are really struggling. The leaves keep turning yellow and dying, often with spots on them. I have tried everything, magnesium, fungicide, lots of natural fertilizer, but nothing is helping them bounce back.
I think in that case, you're also going to have to use something. It's a systemic pesticide called Coenor. You only apply it once or twice a year as a soil drench, and it is very potent, but it takes care of things like small sucking insects that transfer viruses. You just can't get to them when they're all up in a tree hiding between the axils of the leaves and behind and under branches. So often a soil drench systemic poison for insects will do the job better. Otherwise, you seem to be doing everything you can. I need a little bit of help on that one as well if anyone has that advice. Otherwise, go and get the Coenor. But use very responsibly, please.
Cherise, as always, you are just a fountain of information. Thank you so much for coming through to studio today. Great to see you again.
Thank you.
Cherise Viljoen, horticulturist at the Old Nectar Gardens in Stellenbosch.